day and welcome to the SES Investor and Analyst for SES Full Year 2017 Results Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Richard Whiting, Vice President, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and good morning, and thank you for joining the full year and fourth quarter 2017 results presentation. You should by now have received the presentation document. This can be found at the SES.com investors section on the website if you do not already have it. As usual, I would kindly ask you to take notes of the disclaimer at the back. On slide two, we outline the agenda for this morning's presentation. In a moment, I will hand over to our chairman, Romain Bauch, to make a short statement, who will then hand over to management to present the full year and fourth quarter results, starting with our president and CEO, Karine Michel-Saba. At the end of the presentation, of course, we will be able to take questions, for which we are joined by our Andrew Brown, our CFO designate, and we'll be happy to take any questions that you have at the end of the presentation. With that, I will hand over to the chairman. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Richard. Good morning, everyone. As the chairman of the board, I want to share with you information on two recent board-related developments. First, and you will have seen our announcement on 12th of February of the management transition, and I wanted to make sure that some remarks are exchanged with you regarding these changes. First, the board has accepted the decision of our CEO, Karine Michel-Saba, and of our CFO, Patrick McCarthy, to leave their roles on the executive committee. And as announced earlier, Karine has decided to lead a new technology venture, and Patrick will retire during the course of the year. I want here to reiterate my thanks to Karine and to Patrick for their strong contributions to SES. Both remain in their position until the annual general meeting in April, it being understood that Patrick will remain at the disposal of the company during 2018. Today, they will both report on the group results for 2017. As to questions on the timing of the announcement just a few days ago, I want to say that once decisions have been made, price-sensitive information are to be announced without delay. That's what the board did. Second, we are pleased that Steve Collar is stepping up from running our networks business to become the new president and CEO, and that Andrew Brown has come back to resume the CFO role. Steve and Andrew were appointed after full consideration by the board and the nomination committee, enabling us to put in place an effective transition. And as I have worked many years with both of them together, so I fully share the confidence of my colleagues on the board that we will continue to have a strong leadership team at SES. The board has tasked them to complete the transformation of our businesses and to deliver on the strong growth potential of the company, and we have every confidence in their ability to do this. Finally, the board has taken the decision to rebase the dividend for 2017. We did this in yesterday's board meeting and announced it this morning as part of the press release. We are recommending to the shareholders at the annual general meeting on April 5th that the dividend for 2017 should be 0.80 euro, a reduction of 40% from 2016. This rebasing to a lower level is appropriate for SES and will allow us to strengthen our balance sheet while supporting growth opportunities and enabling a progressive dividend in the future. We are deeply aware that it has been a difficult period for our share price. Whilst it is a challenging time for our industry, the best way to rebuild our share price is to deliver on the execution of our strategy, to improve performance, and to maintain clear communications with the capital market. The board and the executive committee are united in this aim, and you will see us make good progress in 2018. And as Richard said, I will now leave it to management to present the 2017 results.
Thank you, Romain. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our results call for the fourth quarter and full year 2017. As noted on slide 4, the year has been an important one for SES as we continue to transform the business for the new operating environment and to position it for growth, building on the opportunity for our unique combination of geostationary and Middle Earth orbit architecture. This transformation has been focused around the integration of our 2016 acquisitions and the establishment of two new market-centric business units, video and networks, with an entirely new operating model. Now, let me be very clear. The business performance was not what we aimed for in 2017. This was partly due to the impact of the transformation, and we were additionally held back by satellite-type problems, which impacted short-term results. Also, bear in mind that we are operating in challenging market conditions. We understand the underlying factors and the context, and these are being addressed in 2018. On a more positive note, we've successfully launched 5 new satellites since January 2017, which bring additional capacity and capability and underpin our future growth. Turning now to slide 5, I would like to remind you of the extent of the transformation that SES is going through as we seek to build scale, differentiated capabilities, and make our business future-proof. Both video and networks are in sectors that are undergoing fundamental changes. By repositioning our business models through a number of important actions, we have refocused our market engagement on the right customer segments to enable SES to sustain its video business while capturing growth in networks. This new operating model is shown on slide 6, which you can see, and the key characteristic of each of the natural business units that were set up in May 2017. These are now largely in place from an organizational perspective, while there is still some work to fully set up the teams and the services that we are now providing to our customers. In parallel, we are now launching a new Fit for Growth program that will ensure that costs are optimized per business area while providing the necessary support for our market engagement in the future. On slide 7, you see again the role of satellite launches in underpinning our competitiveness and growth. As we transform the business to focus on high growth customer segments and networks and to strengthen the resilience of the core video market, we have continued to invest in the right technologies to give us the right capacity at the right cost and to achieve a sustainable competitive advantage. Leveraging our scale and knowledge, we've been able to launch an unprecedented number of satellites with specific capabilities for the markets that they are intended to serve. Steve and Ferd will illustrate this point later in our briefing. For now, it's important to note that this launch program continues in 2018, with 2 satellites launched already and another 5 planned. The rate of technological progress means that the volume of data that can be transferred, the speed at which it can be transferred, and the reliability combined with reduced costs ensures that our offering is attractive and opens up new markets, and we strengthen the relevance of satellite for our customers' businesses. Turning now to slide 8 and the financial results for 2017, we see that revenues overall were down by 5.2% on a like-for-like basis, reflecting some one-off issues, lower periodic revenues, and the underlying market conditions. As we continue to transform our networks business, there has been a slower ramp-up in revenues than originally anticipated at the start of the year as we establish the new organization, the new service offerings, and as we recruit the staff to deliver the anticipated growth, and as we negotiate, close, and implement new contracts. The EBITDA margin also fell to 65.1% as a result of the lower revenues and ongoing investments in building our business capabilities for the future. Despite the strong cash flow, leverage remained close to our threshold of 3.3 times at 3.27 times as a result of the ongoing investment. Due to this level of leverage and the ongoing impact of the business transformation on the economics of the business, the board has decided that the group should seek to strengthen the balance sheet and support committed investments. Accordingly, it has recommended a rebasing of the dividend to a more appropriate level, as referred to by our chairman earlier on our call. Turning now to the 2017 results in more detail, on slide 9, we would like to introduce to you some improved disclosure, which will make it easier for you to understand the economics of our new business model. From now on, all revenues will be reported on a constant FX basis and then divided into underlying and periodic. The periodic data includes all unusual or non-recurring revenues that would otherwise distort the underlying trend. We have provided a 3-year history by quarter for each vertical in the press release, to help you in analyzing our results and future outlook. We have also divided the results of video between distribution and services. As my colleague takes you through the revenue development in more detail, you will see that the resilience of the underlying video business, which is down only by 2.4% for the year as a whole. Networks is down 2.6% for the year, but only 0.8% in the fourth quarter as it starts to gain traction with its new customers. SES has now picked up the pace as it builds its new business, and I'm very pleased to note that video starts the year with 85% of its expected 2018 revenues already committed, and networks has over 75% committed, having seen strong growth in the annualized value of new contracts signed in the last quarter. On that note, I will now hand over to the CEOs of the business unit to take you through their respective performance in 2017, starting with Ferdinand Kaiser of SES Video.
Thank you, Karim, and turning to slide 11. For SES Video, the full year revenue decreased by 3.6% to 1,383 million. This included 351.5 million Q4 revenue, which was 3% lower than the Q4 2016 on a like-for-like basis. While video markets remain competitive, SES has also been affected by the loss of AMC9 and the repositioning of MX1 after certain legacy contracts were not renewed. Notwithstanding these factors, satellite remains an essential distribution platform for delivering quality video content to hundreds of millions of households. This is demonstrated by the 2% growth in the number of total TV channels carried over the SES fleet, which I will come back to shortly. This is also demonstrated by the substantial backlog of 5.3 billion as our customers continue to make long-term commitments to SES. As mentioned already by Karim, more than 85% of our 2018 revenue target for SES Video is already contractually secured. Regarding our commercial activity on slide 12, the objective of SES Video is to be the partner of choice for the delivery of high-quality video anywhere, anytime, and on any screen. On this slide, I have selected some important commercial wins of 2017. This demonstrates the strength and attractiveness of our neighborhoods and their respective technical reach. This is an impressive list of blue-chip customers making long-term commitments to SES Video. Sky renewing 7 transponders in Germany for the long term, where we have also seen QVC commit for additional capacity for a UHD channel for 10 years. In developing markets, we have a new multi-year agreement with Viasat in the Ukraine and with Globecast in Romania to continue to support Orange Romania. Globecast also moved some additional business to SES Video in the US, 2 transponders for cable distribution. In the services business, MX1 won an important contract from Ubiquiti, the major content broker. Here it is about satellite distribution and IP distribution. So for Ubiquiti today, MX1 is aggregating 580 TV channels and converting content into 800 different formats in order to deliver 1,400 linear feeds as well as 50 channels via OTT. We also made further progress in growing the number of commercial Ultra HD channels from 21 to 28. Going forward, we have chosen to show the business performance between 2 main categories, video distribution and video services. On slide 13, starting first with video distribution, which represents 75% of the total revenue of SES Video. This refers to revenue generated from broadcasters and content owners using satellite capacity to distribute their video content to viewers via direct-to-home, direct-to-cable, or to IPTV platforms. On this slide, you can see the impact of foreign exchange and periodic items on the full year and Q4 2017. In Q4 2017, underlying revenue was 3.6% lower, including the satellite health issues. Across the business, Europe was stable in Q4, having been down overall in 2017, as we sold additional capacity for HT and Ultra HT, and this offset a slight decline in pricing per transponder. North America saw a small decline due to some volume reductions and lower revenue from sales for occasional use. In the international markets, the pace of revenue development was affected by the lower available capacity after having lost AMC-9. There are encouraging levels of interest for the incremental capacity on SAS-9 in Asia and SAS-10 in Latin America. Our objective in 2018 is to accelerate the number of channels on these space assets. As mentioned on slide 14, at the end of December, the SAS fleet carried a total of 7,790 V channels, which represented an increase of 2% or 171 additional channels. In Europe, total channels were flat, but importantly, standard definition channels were replaced by new HD and Ultra HD channels, which require more bandwidth. In North America, the switch off of SD channels resulted in an overall reduction, although some were replaced by HD channels. We also see an attractive potential for UHD in this market. Across the international markets, total TV channels grew by 8% to 2,962 channels, as new channels, notably in Africa and Middle East, were launched using previously contracted capacity. The proportion of MPEG-4 channels continues to increase, with 65% of all TV channels now being in MPEG-4. We are going through the usual process of collecting our latest technical reach numbers for 2017, and these will be published with the annual report in April. I'm confident that the new figure will show, again, continued improvement compared with last year's number of 325 million households worldwide. On slide 15, turning now to video services, which represents 25% of SAS Video and includes the revenue from MX1 services business and the HD Plus platform in Germany. For Q4 2017, revenue was 4.4 million lower than Q4 2016. The underlying revenue was down by 2.4 million or 2.6%. This included a year-on-year reduction of 7 million related to MX1. As was mentioned at the Q3 results, this is related to the non-renewal of certain low-margin legacy contracts. Since then, MX1 has continued to sign new contracts, which supported sequential growth in the underlying run rate of revenue. These new contracts, such as with AOTV or FuboTV, provide integrated services from data preparation to content distribution via both linear and non-linear channels. Our HD Plus platform in Germany showed good growth, as the annual subscription fee was increased from 60 to 70 euro for access to the 23 private HD channels. This core offering is now complemented by the addition of a premium Eurosport package. Compared with last year, the number of paying subscribers to HD Plus was stable at 2.1 million. Our customers continue to make long-term commitments and benefit from our unique combination of prime neighborhoods, which give access to a substantial number of viewers and ancillary technical services. This underpins the resilience and longevity of the revenue and cash flows from the video business, and is demonstrated by the substantial contract backlog as shown on slide 16. The chart shows the main drivers of the change in backlog since the end of December 2016. SAS Video was very busy during 2017 and signed contracts for renewals and new business with a total contract value of 1.1 billion. As a result, the contract backlog stood at 5.3 billion at the end of 2017. This represents nearly four times the annual revenue and means that over 85% of the revenue forecast for SAS Video in 18 is already secured. Clearly, we need to focus now on the other 15%. To conclude, video continues to be an absolutely resilient and cash-generating business, offering attractive returns, giving us high visibility as the average contract duration is around 10 years. And with that, I hand over to Steve.
Thanks, Fred. Morning, everyone. I'm going to talk through the main developments and achievements in SES Networks for 2017. And just to kind of remind everyone, we've been sort of fully in the SES Networks mode since May, and we've spent, you know, a good part of the year driving some pretty substantial transformation within the business. We've brought together all of our data centric businesses into one sort of market facing organization, and we're now delivering end to end managed solutions across three verticals on a global basis. So it's really been a year of change, but also a year of delivery. So full year revenue was 3% up on a reported basis, down 1.9% to €646 million on a like-for-like basis. And revenues of €156 million in Q4 was down almost 13% versus Q4 2016, but that's largely driven by a significant periodic revenue from the sale of transponders to Global Eagle in 2016. On an underlying basis, SES Networks was largely flat year on year. But also of note, we grew 7.5% from Q3 to Q4, and encouragingly was the fact that we achieved our strongest quarter of sales to date in Q4, more than doubling our annualized sales volume of Q2 and providing really strong momentum going into 2018. So with that in mind, I'm going to talk a little bit to the customers that we've signed and the business that we've done during the course of 2017 and sort of bring to life a little bit what we're doing within the networks business. And so first up, on Tuesday, we announced our partnership with Atexa. Atexa is the national PTT in Cuba and is providing voice and internet services across the island. Cuba's a super interesting place. It's almost 100% literacy, an incredibly strong education system, but has suffered pretty meaningfully from the lack of connectivity that it's had to the rest of the world for a relatively extended period of time. So we've been working with Atexa for a while, really framed around enhancing their existing infrastructure and delivering sort of an improved set of services into Cuba, architected on our high-performance, low-latency, resilient, and multi-gigabit capacity. And we commissioned a turnkey service for them, so that we designed, developed, deployed, and are now in service with that sort of state-of-the-art MEO capability into the island. And we're delivering to them IP transit services and advanced EPL services, and we'll be doing so for many years to come. And our relationship also gives us the ability to go up the stack with Atexa, so provide them value-added services based on the fact that we now have very much a direct relationship with them. So super excited about that. And that deal mirrors a number of others that I could have talked to where we're delivering core connectivity solutions across many, many geographies, including Kinshasa and Lubumbashi and DRC with Galat Satcom. We're now delivering more than 3 gigabits worth of capacity to them, including in support of Orange. More than a gigabit that we've recently signed and implemented for one of Africa's largest MNOs. We're working, as you may have seen in the press, with our telecom in the Solomon Islands and Timor Telecom and Palau Telecom, all of whom are rolling out protected 4G services using our network for the first time. And we've also brought on online relatively recently a number of sites in Peru. So good, strong progress, I would say, on the fixed data side, particularly referencing our MEO fleet. But it's certainly not limited to MEO. In Malaysia, we're supporting Compudyne in enabling mobile operator Digi to extend its cellular network into the far reaches of Malaysia. And we've signed and implemented similar projects in Mexico and Thailand using the power and reach of our geo fleet. We move now to mobility. In January, we brought SES-15 into service, and at the same time, we secured a major upgrade to our service with Global Eagle, which will be taking up significant capacity. And I'm really pleased that SES-15 is now sort of up, operational, on station, and delivering service. It's become already the primary satellite for the aeronautical service providers over North America. And in addition to Global Eagle, it's home to Panasonic and to Gogo, and you may well have seen the announcement that they've already transferred more than 200 aircraft across onto SES-15, so massively happy to see the progress there.
In maritime, we announced a partnership with Carnival Corporation last quarter to develop medallion nets, and we launched that service with them in November aboard the Regal Princess. We've got two ships signed to medallion net so far, and we expect to expand that relationship, and there'll be more news coming on medallion net next week. But we've also recently announced a deal with Genting's World Dream, and it really sort of underscores our number one position in the cruise sector. I think we're delivering, you know, more capacity to more of the largest cruise ships than any other operator, and we certainly see that trend continuing. And then last but not least, in government, in our government vertical, we've really seen a pleasing rebound in our government business, both in the US and on a global basis. So the US government's now committed to more than 5 gigabits of managed O3b services across 18 government sites, and we're supporting a range of capabilities and applications for them, like sort of large file transfer and reach back capabilities that aren't available from any other operator and with any other capability and technology. And we're doing similarly with the UN, supporting their peacekeeping operations across Africa, and making a real difference to the response that the UN has in some of the hardest places in the world to reach. So these deals reflect the progress that I certainly feel that we're making across the business and the impact that we're having in the market, and the differentiated value propositions and the kind of solutions that we can bring. So with that, I'm going to go relatively briefly through the results for each of the three verticals. If we focus on fixed data, you'll see that we had a moderate decline in 2017 of 6% for the full year, but about half of that was caused by the loss of ANC9, which certainly impacted our fixed data business in North America in particular. Market conditions do continue to be challenging in fixed data, but I do think that, you know, I think those challenges will continue. But in the face of those, we're signing these really large, significant, and sort of deals that rely on the fact that we've invested in infrastructure that is highly differentiated, and we're delivering services that I think are different from those that others can provide. And we do have strong momentum going into 18, and I anticipate growth in our fixed data vertical in 2018. So moving on to page 21, underlying revenue and mobility grew by 5 million or 4.4%, and that was driven largely by new business in aero and maritime. The absolute comparator to 2016 was influenced by this high sort of periodic revenue in 2016, which meant that we were flat overall, including that. Similarly, Q4 was influenced by that sale of transponders to Global Eagle that happened in the fourth quarter of 2016. And just to remind you all, the second tranche of that was recognized in Q1 2017. So we'll have a similar kind of comparator when we talk to our Q1 results. But that said, and again, with the substantial upgrades that we've seen with Global Eagle and the transition of services of GoGo and sort of the robust fill factors that we have on SES 15, really strong contribution that I'm anticipating there for 2018, and again, very optimistic about our mobility business for the year. And then, as I mentioned on slide 22, our government business returned to growth on a full year and on a quarter basis, which was massively pleasing. Our government solutions team in the US secured some really important wins, and the take-up, in particular, of the DoD on our MEO fleet really sort of speaks well for the future prospects. And that combined with the business that we're doing in global government with the UN, we also signed NATO with the NATO AGS program within our global government vertical, which is our most recent vertical that we've stood up, and we see some good traction happening there as well. A couple of words on slide 23 around sort of the transformation that's been going on in SES Networks. So look, our ability to deliver integrated turnkey managed solutions has existed for a long time within SES, but in different parts, including our SESGS business, TechCom, O3B, and within kind of the core of SES itself. And we've brought all of those capabilities together in a very short space of time to form SES Networks. And we've organized ourselves around verticals that I've just talked about and some of the sub-verticals within them. And we're driving into those verticals by working very, very closely with our customers. We've also put in place a common product house, which has designed and defined and rolled out a number of common products. And I talked earlier on about IP transit and Ethernet private line. We have diversity and hybrid solutions, which we're now able to roll out across our verticals. And we're delivering kind of SD-WAN solutions
software-defined networks, where we're adapting our network across our MEO and GEO fleets to deliver more value, enhancing resilience and delivering better performance to our customers. And that's really starting to pay dividends, I would say. And we're seeing that reflected in some of these deals and the announcements and the traction that we have. And a really good example of our uniqueness is in November, we announced that SES Networks became the only satellite-enabled service provider to achieve MEF certification. So this is the Metro Ethernet Forum. It basically means we look like a carrier, we look like a telco. Our services have been stamped by a body that effectively everybody in the industry is familiar with. And it gives us, you know, a huge ability to drive into sort of the telco space and the MNO space. And the conversations are reduced very, very quickly when you say we're MEF certified. And amongst all of this transformation and all of this work, we also placed an order for the most transformative satellite-enabled network ever in the form of O3b Empower. I couldn't be more excited about it. We announced it in September, and we're well underway with the production. And, you know, I strongly believe that it'll revolutionize our business, our industry. But it also has the benefit of riding on the sort of simplicity and elegance that we've delivered with O3b and the MEO offerings that we have. So look, just to conclude from a network standpoint, you can see that we've increased our backlog by over €250 million in the year when adjusted for FX, and I'm really pleased by that. As you know, our contracts in networks are typically shorter, so I think that's, you know, a sign of real progress. And we also enter 2018 with more than 75% of our expected revenue for the year already secured. Again, that's higher than is typical, I would say, and certainly higher than last year, and reflects the momentum that we see from Q4 sales going into 2018. So with that, I'll hand over to Parek for the financial highlights.
Yeah, thank you, Steve, and good morning, everyone. So starting on slide 26, where we have the financial highlights, reported revenue for the 12 months was 1.6% lower and 5.2% lower on a like-for-like basis. At €1.32 billion, group EBITDA was 8.8% lower on a reported basis and 7.6% down like-for-like, with the EBITDA margin at 65.1%. Operating profit of €611 million included the second quarter AMC9 impairment charge of €38 million, giving a reported operating profit margin of 30%. Excluding this one-off item, the operating profit margin was 31.9%. Profit of the group was $596.1 million compared with $963 million in 2016, which included a one-off accounting gain of $495 million from the consolidation of O2B. The 2017 profit also benefited from non-recurring tax credits, and I will come back to that in detail later on. While net operating cash flow was slightly down versus prior year, lower capex led to a 16.2% increase in free cash flow before financing and acquisitions. Net debt to EBITDA remained within the financial framework at 3.27 times. And finally, the combination of strong backlogs in video and networks, as outlined by Ferd and Steve, meant that the total contract backlog remains strong at €7.5 billion. If we move to slide 27 on revenue, now Steve and Ferd have outlined in a lot of detail the performance in the individual MBUs. Of the overall like-for-like revenue decrease, the two MBUs represented approximately 60% of the reduction, with the balance due to lower other revenue in 2017. And as already covered, this year's underlying revenue was affected by satellite health in both video and networks, and the impact of non-renewal of legacy MX1 services in video. Total video revenues were 3.6% lower like-for-like, with two-thirds of the change due to lower underlying revenue, including health and MX1, and one-third due to lower periodic revenue. Network like-for-like revenue was down 1.9%, and this was mainly due to the loss of AMC9. The periodic revenues included approximately €20 million revenue from Global Eagle transponder sale in quarter one, 2017, and as Steve has mentioned, this item will therefore affect the year-on-year comparison of the quarter one 2018 number. The 2018 video comparison will also be impacted by the implementation of changes related to the adoption of the new IFRS 15 accounting standards on revenue recognition. Going forward, this will require the straight lining of the initial HG Plus activation fee, which previously had a higher upfront revenue recognition being matched with subscriber acquisition costs. As there's no restatement of the 2017 accounts, this is expected to reduce the HD Plus revenue by 15 to 20 million in 2018, although there is no cash impact. Lower other revenue contributed the remaining variance in 2017 compared to 16. Having been exceptionally high during 2014 to 2016, this line returned to a normalised level in 2017. So turning to the next slide on EBITDA, which is 7.6% lower like-for-like. Essentially, this is due to the lower revenues. Group operating expenses were slightly down versus last year. This was driven by a reduction of 6 million in the fixed cost base, and the full year like-for-like margin was 65.1%. If we look at slide 29, we show the key drivers of the depreciation expense. Firstly, the change in scope from consolidating O2B and R Media and adjusting the constant FX led to an increase of 88.6 million. Going the other way, on a like-for-like basis, recurring depreciation was 8.1% lower, with reductions across both the GEO and the MEO fleets, and the latter due to the end of the depreciation period for the first three O2B satellites. And finally, as already stated, the AMC9 impairment charge also impacted. On the next slide, we see net profit. The 2016 net profit included the one-off accounting gain of 467.5 million, which we're stripping out here so we can have a like-for-like comparison. The reduction of 210 million for operating profit was then more than offset by lower financing costs, lower taxes, and lower share of associates. Net financing costs were 31 million lower, despite the increase in scope. And this is due to the lower same scope financing costs, higher capitalized interest, and the financing synergies that we delivered as part of the refinancing of the O2B debt, which occurred at the end of 2016. The largest contribution in terms of the movement of net income was in tax, which moved from a charge of 114.1 million last year to a benefit of 130.6 million this year. And I will give you more detail on this in the next slide. The group share of associates shows a positive year-to-year movement of 62.4 million, and this is purely because O2B is now fully consolidated. Now, on slide 30, we break out the tax in more detail. The underlying tax charge of 95.3 million was 16.5% lower than the prior year. In quarter four 2017, the impact of the changes in the US tax legislation resulted in a positive accounting gain of 94.4 million. And this is due to the reduction of deferred tax liabilities recorded on the balance sheet, which were previously accounted for at the 35% tax rate and now are accounted for at the new US corporate income tax rate of 21%. This was in addition to the recognition of certain US tax credits during 2017, totaling 56.7 million. Third, and as outlined in the half-year earnings call, the recognition of a significant tax asset in relation to withholding tax in Latin America as a result of a successful litigation outcome resulted in a credit of 51.1 million. And finally, there were other one-off tax items contributing a further 23.8 million of tax income. Now, if we exclude these one-offs, the 2017 normalized effective tax rate was 20.4%. On slide 32, we deal with free cash flow. The improvement in free cash flow before financing and acquisitions from 655 to 761 million reflects two metrics. First, while the absolute net operating cash flow was marginally lower than 2016, the group's cash conversion ratio increased from 88 to 95% as more of the EBITDA was converted into cash. Second, the cash absorbed by investing activities was 129 million lower as the CapEx profile is reducing from its recent peak in 2016 and certain CapEx milestones moved into the first half of 17. Consequently, free cash flow as a percent of sales increased from 32 to 37%, and CapEx as a percent of sales was down to 22%. On slide 33, we cover the CapEx guidance, which is based on our US dollar business plan rate of 115. In case of modelling at different FX rates, a good rule of thumb to apply would be to assume that roughly half the CapEx is denominated in US dollars. The total CapEx envelope for 2017 to 2022 is essentially unchanged at $3.4 billion. There are two main changes from the version shown with our quarter 3 2017 results. First, the 2017 CapEx was $130 million lower. This reflects $30 million of savings achieved, such as lower launch costs and insurance. And the second element is a shift of $100 million of CapEx to later periods. The cumulative effect of the new CapEx phasing plus negotiated terms means that 2021 is now expected to be €1.13 billion compared with €980 million before. The spike in 2021 relates to the investment in O3b mPOWER, where the satellites are only paid for on delivery. This agreement allowed us to improve the NPV and the IRR of the project by matching the investment to the delivery of the assets and the commencement of revenues. As part of the procurement agreement, SES has the option to acquire the satellites outright, which is our base assumption, or to enter into a lease agreement. For the purpose of modelling the CapEx profile, the outright purchase is assumed as the base case assumption. Should the lease option be elected, the cash out would be $600 million lower in 2021 and approximately $60 million higher in 22, 23 and 24, with the remaining gap settled in 2025. On slide 34, we see the net debt. The net debt to EBITDA, as mentioned, was 327 at year-end. This is based on the rating agency methodology, which treats 50% of the hybrids as debt. The reduction by $479.5 million in gross debt was the main driver for the 4.2% decrease in reported net debt to $3.95 billion. The reported average interest cost improved from 3.87% to 3.66%, while the average maturity remains relatively long at 7 years. Now, finally, the guidance on slide 35. Again, this is based on our SES business plan US dollar rate of 115. It assumes nominal launch schedule and health. For 2018, video revenue is expected to be within the range of $1.3 billion to $1.32 billion. This represents a decline of approximately 5.5 to 4 percentage points, of which the change from IFRS 15 and the washout of the satellite health and the MX1 non-renewals represent approximately a 3 percentage point reduction. For 2020, video revenue is targeted to be more than $1.35 billion, representing a 0.4% CAGR versus 2018. Networks will grow to be between $660 million and $690 million in 2018 and over $875 million in 2020, representing a 10% plus CAGR versus 2018. The EBITDA margin will be slightly lower for 2018, and this margin will include a one-off restructuring charge of $10 to $12 million in quarter one. And then after 2018, it will return to at least be in line with the 2017 level. And with that, I will hand over back to Steve.
Thanks, Padraig. And I'd like to add my commitment to delivering those numbers and also, importantly, to providing you with the right level of transparency on our business going forward, which I think you've seen, I hope you've seen in the press release and obviously also in this call and the detail that we're providing. And before moving on to questions, and I know we've been talking for a while, I just want to say a few words, a few thoughts from me as the incoming and future CEO of SES. So firstly, I'm enormously excited to introduce Andrew Bragg to those of you who are not familiar with Andrew. I'm super happy to be working with Andrew again. He's probably the most experienced CFO in our industry, having been the CFO of Intelsat at 39 years old and led the business into privatization and the spin-off to New Skies. He and I first worked together there, where Andrew oversaw two IPOs, a privatization, and ultimately the sale to SES. And more recently, as you know, Andrew's been the CFO of SES and the CFO at O3b, but also brings some important experience from Silicon Valley and as chairman of TomTom, and I think he's joining us on his second day. So an exciting future ahead. And as we sort of look forward to taking the helm, there's no doubt it's been a challenging time in our industry. It's probably undergone more change and disruption in the last few years than at any point in our history. And the recent performance of the business has not met expectation. But I do feel strongly that the time we've taken to transform our business into the two business units that are really deeply seated in our markets with SES Video and SES Networks, and the products and the solutions and the value propositions that we've taken the time to develop in 2017, really position us well to deliver to our customers and to capture the growth that we see coming in 2018. It's also true we've had some challenges with our fleet in 2017, but now we start to see the benefit of our investment program with SES 14, SES 15 and SES 16 all recently launched and safely in orbit. And with four more O3b satellites launching in a couple of weeks, I'm really excited about the prospects for the business and the sort of the strength of our fleet going forward. And to conclude, you know, my priority now and my focus is all around execution. We have the building blocks in place. We've got a sound strategy and a strong organization, and it's now about serving our customers and delivering our numbers. And on the network side, as you've heard, I feel that we've got some strong momentum coming out of the back end of 2017, some strong sales volumes and new customers that are already live on our fleet. And also encouraging is our pipeline continues to look strong with respect to new sales and new business. And the strength, the strength of SES has always been and will continue to be our DTH and video business, anchoring as we do many of the largest and most successful orbital locations in Europe and in the rest of the world. So look, with that, I really look forward to meeting all of you in the coming weeks and months and spending some more time with each of you on our business and sort of talking about the market more broadly. With our investments, the majority of our investments behind us, a strong fleet and a profile of growth, particularly in networks, I see our capital efficiency improving in the coming years. But all of that is underpinned by strong and sustained execution. That's exactly what I and the rest of the leadership team at SES intend to deliver. So with that, I would propose we hand back to you, Richard, and questions.
Thank you, Steve. Operator, as you heard, we can go ahead with questions.
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll now take our first question from Paul Sidney from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I just had three questions, please. Firstly, I was just wondering how much new management, so Steve and Andrew, were involved in the guidance setting process for 18 and 20. Clearly, the announcement of management change was just over a week ago. So, just wondering how much input they had into the guidance, and the follow on from that, whether a different approach was used to set that guidance. And then, secondly, you're guiding growth in video revenues in full year 20 from full year 18. I was just wondering, could you maybe give us a bit of a bridge? Yeah, in terms of how that return to growth breaks down between, channel growth, channel mix, and the drag from compression, MX1, etc. Thank you. And then just lastly, on MX1, I think you mentioned during the presentation that you had actually recontracted some of that, the 7 million euros, which has been a drag on revenues relating to those legacy contracts. I'm just wondering if you could give us a bit more detail on how much of that 7 million has been recontracted and whether it's been recontracted for a higher rate. Thank you.
Yeah, so Paul, I start with the last two questions. So working on the MX1, which is an easy one. So since the last quarter, there's about a half million of that contracted. So in Q3, we spoke about a year-to-year change of 7.5. In Q4, we spoke about a year-to-year change of 7. So that's a half million from a quarter basis, or a million on an annual basis. With regard to the video development, it is correct that in 2018, we are showing the minus 4 to minus 5.5%. And as I said, you have to take 3 percentage points out of that There's an accounting adjustment, no cash impact whatsoever. It's purely how revenue is recognised. And then there's the MX1 and the health. Of the amount that's left, that should be seen in the context of SES 10 and SES 9 are ramping up. They have contracts on them, but the ramp up takes a certain period of time. And also we see 2018 as a period where MX1 is going to continue to stabilize, but not necessarily grow. And as said earlier, we continue to see some pricing pressure in the European market for video. Looking then for 2019 and 2020, I think the key differentials are, number one, stabilization and growth starting in MX1. Secondly, the continued ramp up in the emerging markets for the assets that have been signed. There's also some new assets coming in that have new capacity. And we expect to see some continued growth in video services. On the guidance, I just make one comment and then maybe Steve will also add. So the guidance is a company guidance. It's approved by the board and it's approved by the executive committee.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. It's company guidance. It's Andrew's second day, so clearly Andrew's ability to kind of look at it has been pretty limited. But we're committed to delivering these numbers, and everything that I've seen to date suggests that the business can deliver and we can deliver these numbers. And very comfortable with where it is.
That's great. Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Patrick Wellington from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. A couple of things. Firstly, can you tell us what you think the savings from the Fit for Growth plan will be? You've told us what the costs are. Secondly, just on the network side, mobility, I think, was flat underlying, which is maybe a bit disappointing relative to last year's performance. Can you tell us about the dynamics in that market, maybe some of the pricing versus volume characteristics? Thirdly, just on SES Networks, you're talking about doubling the annualized sales volume from Q2 17. I just want to make sure I understand what doubling annualized sales volume means in that context. Can you talk around that a little bit? Thank you.
So perhaps, Patrick, I'll kick off on Fit for Growth and then Steve will take the two networks-related contracts. So with regard to the Fit for Growth initiative, this is really aiming to prepare us for future growth and to ensure that we're aligning our capabilities with our strategy. And therefore, it's more about making sure that we have the right capabilities and the right resources in the right place, and in particular focusing on having the best possible and most effective front-end resources for execution. So it's not necessarily targeting an absolute cost reduction. It's more about having the right resources in the right place and also being able to redeploy internal resources. Now what you will see then as the margin progresses, obviously there's a cost of this in this year, but what you will see as we go forward, on the one hand, the networks will grow, which has a certain managed services element on it, so they have a lower margin but also a lower capex. But on the other hand, you'll see an improvement over time because we are using internal resources, redeploying internal resources and growing the capability to sell. So you'll see good operational gearing over time. So Fit for Growth is about redeploying, having the right resources in the right place, and then fully enabling the operational gearing going forward.
Yeah, and look, to pick up the question on mobility, and maybe to start with the overall market, I think we see very strong dynamics in the mobility market right now. The two segments I would say that I'm most optimistic about are aeronautical and cruise, which are the two sort of market segments that we're probably strongest in today. In terms of 2017, obviously we didn't have tons of, the main new capacity, the main new assets that we bring into this market space are O3B and SES 15, followed by SES 14, and all of those sort of come online in 2018, including, as I said, early in Q1 for SES 15. So we wouldn't have necessarily expected huge incremental growth. I think the sort of the fact that we had some periodic sales at the back end of 2016, particularly in our Mio cruise business, sort of hides a little bit some underlying growth that we see. But I think the key point here is we do see growth in mobility across both maritime and aeronautical, less so in energy, although that even that market is now coming back and we're starting to see traction with some of the operators in the energy space. And then on the question about sort of the sales volume, this is obviously a metric that we look at pretty closely internally, and so we annualize the value of the sales or bookings that we close in any given quarter. And if you compare the amount of business we closed in Q4 within our networks business 2017, it's double the amount of business that we closed in Q2. And I would say the Q2 number was relatively typical. So, you know, it's not that Q2 was low. It's really that we saw strong traction sort of coming out of Q3 and into Q4 from a sales volume standpoint. And obviously the important part about that is, as we've talked about before, it takes a little while to turn sales into revenue, because typically what we then do once we've signed is we start implementing networks. And as we sign business in Q4, it starts to reflect into revenue in Q1 and Q2. And so that gives us, you know, good confidence in our performance during 2018.
And thank you, Sue. And just a quick follow-up. Karim, we will miss you. You've been a great growth proponent within SES. Steve, would you characterize yourself as similarly looking to be a sort of growth proponent of SES and slightly live life on the edge? I mean, the dividend cut could have been a bit more. The leverage is still pretty high. But you're taking this growth-oriented attitude towards SES. Is that right?
Look, I think... Karim has sort of created the conditions for us to grow, which is enormously exciting. So, you know, we've done some important work in sort of structuring our business during 2017. We've made some sensible investments over the course of the last 2 or 3 years that we're now starting to see coming to the market. And so I think, you know, I inherit the business at a time where we do have the opportunity to grow. That said, it's all about execution. It's all about delivering numbers. And I'd far rather be sitting here talking to you in a few quarters with those numbers behind me than right now. So that's, I wouldn't characterize myself in any way at this point. It's all about the business and our ability to deliver on numbers.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Laurie Jameson from Deutsche Bank.
Hi there. So first question, just on the balance sheet. You're up to 3.3 times in terms of leverage, but you've described this previously as a comfortable level, and you should delever over the next 3 years. So can you just talk about the motivations for such a large cut in a dividend, and what should we consider the ceiling on leverage that you're willing to go to when we're thinking about what progressive means in terms of dividend? The second question is just on video. You've still got a 1 to 2.5% decline underlying here for 2018. Now, you've previously said that video is stable and resilient, and, you know, as a core business. So why are you still seeing decline even after of that scale, even after MX1, AMC, and your IFRS issues? And why is that underlying going to improve in 2019 and 2020? Thank you.
Yes, sorry. So I start with the video, and Ferdinand may also add. So as I said previously, and you were correct in saying, if you back out the items highlighted, it's a decline of -1% to -2.5%. So the different components in there are on the positive side. We have SES10, we have SES9. We're beginning to contract those, but there's, let's say, a later ramp up of the capacity. So that's also of the contracts coming into service. So that's also an important factor for 19 and 20. Is that we see the contracts coming in, but we see the OSDs happening later. On the other side, we continue to see, let's say, a certain amount of, or have seen a certain amount of pricing pressure in Europe. The prices have been holding up quite well in the individual markets, but nevertheless, we believe that Europe now is stabilizing. We saw stable in the fourth quarter of this year, but we expect going forward also into next year that there may be some decline in the European market. And then also, as I said, MX1, we still see MX1 in a stable situation. If you exclude the renewal impact that was discussed, in a stable situation, maybe even a slight decline. And then as we look into 2019 and 2020, the important thing is that we're seeing a very good ramp up in HD, but also in Ultra HD. And as Ferd said, we went from 20 to 28 Ultra HD channels, and we see the Ultra HD growth improving. Also from the compression side, we have now close to around 64-65% of our overall channels in Impact 4. So we're definitely going more and more on the other end of the compression pendulum, so that the HD growth and Ultra HD will more than outweigh that. And then also we believe that the MX1 business will return to growth. And so these, I would say, are the drivers on video. Looking at the balance sheet, so our approach to the balance sheet is, and indeed 3.3 is the threshold, and our approach to the balance sheet is to continue and to manage the balance sheet and the leverage well below the 3.3 times.
Okay, would you just care to, I mean, because you've given this fairly loose guidance of progressive dividend, so when you're saying below 3.3 times, can you just give us perhaps a bit more quantification on that to help model that?
Yeah, no, I think at this stage, Laurie, I think what's important at this stage, and you see that clearly also in the opening comments from our chairman and the comments from Kareem, is that we are looking to strengthen the balance sheet. We want to strengthen the balance sheet also because we think that's the right thing to do in terms of enabling our growth, and particularly our committed growth. And so at this point of time, the overall threshold continues to be 3.3, but we have a very clear target as a company to manage the business with a stronger balance sheet going forward and to manage the leverage well below the 3.3. We are committed to a progressive dividend going forward, but in terms of the level of progressive dividend, we will monitor the developments, and you know we will give more insight on that as time goes on, and also indeed, that's the positive part, is that the more that we are executing and the stronger we are executing, then the better the progressive dividend can be.
Okay, thanks a lot.
We will now take our next question from Michael Bishop from Goldman Sachs.
Yes, hi, good morning. Just two questions from me, please. Just picking up on some of the video data points and the helpful split you've given us between services and broadcast. I was wondering if we effectively lap the MX1 headwinds, so we think about 19 and 20, what's implied within video guidance for the specific growth in distribution revenues versus service revenues? Because I seem to remember in 2016 you had hinted that MX1 could grow mid-single digits on an underlying basis. You know, is that still the case? And then secondly, just pulling together the margin targets and the CapEx decisions as well, are you stepping away from the 10% mid-term ROIC target today? Thanks very much.
So just on the last one, can you confirm what you mean by the 10% mid-term growth target? What are you referring to?
I was returning to the ROIC target, so the return on invested capital.
No, absolutely. We continue in the medium term, and what we've always said about the ROIC, it's at the point of time that we would have ramped up the new capacity coming on board, including the additional 8 satellites of O3B, and we've always seen that the end of 2021 into 2022, and we're continuing to target a double-digit ROIC for that period. What we will see and what you will see in these results is that we have a reported ROIC of 7.7%, but when you back out the exceptional tax item, we have a normalized ROIC of 5.1%. it will continue to be flat, maybe slightly increase 18, and then as you see the growth coming through that we discussed today in 19 and 20 and beyond, this will improve ROI. You should also remember that we have very good development in normalized capex. You know, we've reduced the normalized capex. We've set a 20% target by 2022. We announced with O3b empowered removal of two geo satellites, and therefore we have a substantial part of that already committed, and we continue to optimize our balance sheet in terms of financing costs. And so all this supports the 10% ROIC as a medium-term target. With regard to, if you can just remind me of your other two questions.
It was just one other question. It was effectively trying to get towards what you're implying for a video broadcast versus video services growth for 2019-2020 within guidance, because I seem to remember when you first bought RR Media and we talked about combination with MX1, you were talking about mid-single digit growth, and clearly we've got headwinds in 18, but as they lap, what's the growth outlook in 19-20?
Yeah, as we mentioned, so on MX1, we didn't renew some of the low-margin legacy contracts. We assume for MX1 stabilization in 2018 and slight growth afterwards. Otherwise, amongst the other factors driving the growth in the direction of 2020 is, of course, the international business with the new assets in Asia and Latin America, and, of course, additional Ultra HD channels, which we see now picking up.
Just to confirm, then, it sounds like there's no difference in growth assumptions between broadcast and services within the guidance.
So first of all, between 2018 and 2020, as I said earlier, there's an overall CAGR of about 0.4%. So the way that you need to look at the video business is a very resilient business, which is stable to a slight increase. And there I would say that the distribution business is certainly a stable business, very cash generative and stable, and then we would expect to see, as Fer said, slight growth in the services business.
Okay, thanks very much.
We will now take our next question from Wilton Fry from Royal Bank of Canada.
Hi there. A couple of questions. You made two meaningful acquisitions in 2016 of RR Media and O3b. You don't appear to have recorded any balance sheet impairments. Have you conducted any impairment tests yet? And if so, has RR Media not been impaired? Why has it not been impaired given the impact on MX1? Secondly, regarding executive compensation, you don't have any disclosure at the moment as you follow minimum Luxembourg disclosure rules. Have you any plans to disclose what KPIs the new management team are going to be remunerated on? Thank you.
So, hi, morning, Wilson. I will take the first question. And with regard to, the short answer is no. There are no impairments on either of these, on either of these investments. And indeed, they are subject to impairment reviews. And indeed, that's an important element, as you can imagine, in the audit. With RR Media, it's important to point out that the cash generating unit for RR Media is MX1. So when you come to look at the impairment, you're looking at the cash generation of MX1, which includes SES Platform Services and RR Media. So it's the two together. And there's a very healthy surplus. And also with regard to O3b, the important point to note is that O3b had a good year. O3b is delivering along the expectations. And this is an individual cash generating unit where also there was no impairment and quite a healthy surplus.
Yeah, maybe Thomas, as chairman, I want to comment on the question regarding remuneration. So as you know, we will disclose in our annual report some details. And the relevant thing maybe to be said here is that our overall compensation to the leadership team is really composed of three elements: a base salary, a cash bonus, and a long-term incentive plan with stock options, restricted shares, and performance shares. And clearly, most of the long-term incentive plan and clearly the cash bonus are based on performance, on personal performance, on financial performance. And maybe to illustrate this with the 2017 result, the bonus, the cash bonus resulting from the financial results of the company for all the executives is zero. So simply to tell you that we have a very disciplined compensation policy, which is really based on the success of the company, and which should really prove that there is a strong alignment between the interests of shareholders and the interests of the leadership team.
Will you be disclosing individual KPIs, for example, EBITDA or cash flow, as part of that procedure? Thank you.
No, we don't. We publish for the group, so you know the number of members of the executive committee, and as you can take it for granted that there's not a huge difference between the different members of the executive committee except for the CEO, I think it's quite easy for you to really calculate what's the average remuneration of a member of DC. And we are benchmarking this every second year, and so we have clear indication that the remuneration that SAS is applying is fully in line with best market practice.
We will now take our next question from Nick Dempsey from Barclays.
Good morning, guys. I've got three questions left. First of all, you're accepting that you're seeing price pressure in video in Europe. When we've heard satellite management teams accepting they're seeing price pressure, what we tend to have seen in the next little while is that price pressure has got worse, as in everyone who then negotiates with you is wanting an even bigger price cut. Is it possible to be able to predict what will happen to pricing in the next couple of years out to 2020 to the degree that you clearly are in your guidance, or is there a real risk that that gets worse with every large renewal? Second question, just specifically on 2018 guidance. Periodic, can you give us a rough sense? I'm not expecting you to give us a number, but a rough sense of what you're expecting in video and networks for periodic built into your guidance. And then third question, again for 2018 guidance, SES-12, SES-14, the new O3B satellites, when do you expect them to start delivering revenues this year? And can you give us a few comments on the kind of initial fill expectations for those?
So, first of all, regarding the pricing in Europe, In many European markets we are present, we have the privilege of serving premium clients in premium neighborhoods, giving the very strong technical reach, and therefore these customers have been paying premium prices, if I may say so. So it means that when we mention a slight decline in Europe, that this is a slight decline from a very high level, as the prices we are asking in Europe are for sure amongst the highest prices in the industry. So the prices are directly linked to the technical reach, to the evolution of the technical reach. So this is a very important currency we are using when renegotiating contracts. As I mentioned before, also the renewals of the contracts are long-term renewals, and therefore we assume an real stability of the prices during the years to come.
Why don't I take one on the sort of contribution from the new assets? So firstly, you know, as I said, SES-15 more or less from the beginning of the year, which is great. SES-16, which is our GovSat satellite, our joint venture with the Luxembourg government, that's around 9 months of revenue contribution. SES-12 and SES-14 will be about a quarter, so the fourth quarter. And the new O3B satellites, by the time we commission them and bring them into the constellation, it's a little more than 6 months' worth of revenue contribution.
Yeah, and Nick, on the periodic question. So by definition, periodic is difficult to forecast because that's why we're showing it separately. I would say two data points. I would say the first one is we provide in the press release by quarter for the last 3 years. What the periodic has been. So you have a data point there of 12 quarters. And if you look at that, you work out the average, it's about 13-14 million per quarter. That has included some transponder sales, so that might be a bit on the high side. But if you look back at the past and take that as an indication, then I think about 10 million a quarter is a reasonable number going forward. As was also said at the start, you should remember that there's the other revenue line, which is separate, and there that should typically be around between 5 to 10 million.
Sorry, Brian, I didn't quite catch the last bit about 5 to 10. Sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah, so there's two data points. There's the overall periodic revenue, which is booked in a vertical, where you can look back at the average of the last 12 quarters, and there I would take a number around 10 million a quarter. And then there's another line which is not part of video and which is not part of networks, which is called other revenue. And you have to remember to add that on as well, and that will be about 5 to 10 million euro.
Oh, yeah. Understood. And sorry, just one more follow-up. Just on SES 12, 14 and the new O3B satellites, maybe some comments about the fill you expect on those ones versus, for example, SES 15 at the start.
I'll sort of give you some directional view. So maybe starting with O3B. So we are full in some of our regions for the O3B constellation. So in particular, in the sort of Caribbean, Brazil, North American region, in the Middle East and Africa, and in the Pacific, this capacity will sort of immediately start to contribute. So there are beams already on the new constellation that effectively will go into service as soon as as soon as the constellation has been initiated with the new satellites. In terms of SES-14, so it's obviously orientated also around aero and to some degree the maritime market, and we have some significant commitments already on SES-14. I would say not to the level of SES-15, but certainly we have some commitments on SES-14. That said, as I mentioned, there's only a quarter of revenue in 2018 for SES-14. And for SES-12 is kind of a mix of replacement and new business. And so by definition, when it comes into service, it already has a certain amount of fill because it's taking over for some business that's already at that orbital location. As far as the new sort of high throughput capacity on SES-12, we are looking to drive, let's say, higher fill factors before that satellite gets on station, and we have an opportunity to grow with SES-12.
Great, that's very helpful. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Eric Boudet from Statistic. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. A couple of questions. First one is on video. You mentioned a slight pricing pressure on video in Europe, but you're expecting stability going forward in 2019-20. Is that stability expected simply because you don't have any more renewals coming up, or simply because your conversations will change with the renewals you have? My second question is simply a data point. Could you give us what revenues did O3B generate in 2017? And my third question is regarding your C-band in the U.S. You might try to monetize it with Intelsat. I was wondering if you could give us an idea of how much C-band do you have over the U.S., and how much is absolutely necessary for you to keep going forward for your cable headends? Thank you.
Pricing in Europe, it's in fact a combination of the two. We have no major renewals coming up now during the next 12, 18 months. And on the other hand, it is the important criteria is the technical reach. For instance, we a couple of months ago, we renewed long-term contracts with the German public service, and we renewed them at existing prices.
So I'll take over the C-band topic since I've been involved very closely with the working team, and as for the public record, I've had the opportunity to meet with the FCC chairman a few days ago. So factually, the combination of SES and Intelsat in the U.S. market provides clarity around what part of the C-band could be made available to the mobile operator to the extent of 90%. So that's the combination of these two organizations together in terms of the impact that we can have in sort of influencing the decision. Now, when it comes to the impact of part of the C-band that could be made available to the mobile operator that we are proposing, our approach has been that the number one priority is to maintain the service for our broadcasters in the U.S. And so that proposal was made on this premise, and it was a message that both myself and my counterpart from Intelsat had the opportunity to underscore to the chairman as well as to the commissioners with whom we have met. So I think for the benefit of this call, the premise of all our conversations and proposal is that we will maintain the continuity of that service. And therefore, whatever we'll be able to free will actually serve the interest of the MNOs as well as will allow us to continue serving our business going forward.
Yeah, and Eric, on the O2B question. So the O2B performance is on track, and it's underpinning the execution of our strategy. I'll give you some numbers around that. In terms of giving an individual O2B number, it's not really meaningful anymore because we're now managing business overall, and the beauty of the networks in BU is that it's combining the MEO and the GEO capacity together, and actually many of the transactions that Steve and the networks team have signed, they're very unique because they're taking GEO capacity and MEO capacity, and a lot of those have been announced. And I think that the reinforcement of the O2B performance and the network strategy is to really look at what's been happening in 2017 in our networks verticals versus what happened in 2016 when we had only just acquired O2B. And just a couple of data points there. So for 2017, fixed data, if you exclude the AMC9 impact, was essentially stable. If you looked at the same set of metrics for 2016, fixed data was down 20%. So that's an enormous change in the profile. Also, government, if you look at 2016, it was down minus 10%. And now what we're seeing in government and the results we announced today is a slight growth in government. So essentially, the O2B performance is on track and it's underpinning the execution of the strategy, and you see that in those numbers.
Okay, thank you. If I just may, if I understood well your answer on the C-band, it means that if you ever reach an agreement with the FCC and Intelsat, there is no revenue that's going to disappear on your video C-band distribution in the U.S. You're going to keep 100% of what you're currently generating. Is that correct?
So our commitment is to continue to serve our clients. That's absolutely our number one priority. And once we anchor this priority, we move to the next question, what part of the C-band we can make available to the mobile operator. So that's the framework that has been shaping our thought process and shaping our proposal to the FCC. And this framework has been equally shared by Intelsat.
Operator, next question.
We will now take our next question from Richard Smith from Newsweek. Please go ahead.
Hi there. If I can just sort of take you back to the comments around the balance sheet. Obviously, you've referenced this wish to kind of strengthen the balance sheet, albeit sort of only really within the context of that 3.3 times cap on leverage. What's your... There's a big pickup in this committed capex in 2021. What kind of leverage would you say you need to get to ahead of that, you know, in kind of 2020, before the big capex hit takes? I'm just trying to get my hands around to what extent you see the 3.3 times as a very hard target, or, you know, on a timing basis, you could find yourself straying over it.
So as I said earlier, and that's also fully applies to the target leverage at the end of 2021, is that our target is to be well below 3.3.
Okay. That's fine. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Kristen Crosby from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the question. So most of my questions have already been asked, but just one here then. In light of the planned balance sheet strengthening you've discussed, can you give us any early thoughts as to how you might look to address your upcoming debt maturities this October and next March? And as kind of a follow-up there, do you see any potential for additional hybrid capital issuance as you're addressing those?
Yeah, thank you, Christian. So, indeed, we have a very balanced portfolio of debt, which matures in a very balanced manner. We have €500,000 maturing this year, a Eurobond. We have €500 million Eurobond. We have $500 million bond maturing next year, and we would look very much at refinancing those as senior debt, normally looking also taking the opportunity to extend the tenure of our overall debt, while at the same time having a target of not necessarily increasing the cost base. But we don't foresee any further issuance of perpetual bonds or hybrid bonds.
Okay, that's excellent. So, just in terms of then that the strengthening you've discussed, that seems more organically driven then as opposed to from a pay down perspective?
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question from David Serdan from Kepler. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. A few questions for you. Sorry if I repeat the question, but I had a technical issue. Just on the tax rate, which tax rate do you expect for the next year? This is my first question. And second question is regarding O3B. You are more transparent with the market, which is a positive, but you decline to give any number on O3B while this is your major investment for the next year. So I think that it will be very helpful for all of us to have an update on O3B. What do you expect O3B to generate by 2020? And second, can you remind us the rationale of investing in Empower, and how do you see the competition from new project or existing project, and at which extent have you changed your expectation on O3B and O3B Empower? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, David. So I will take the first question, and Steve will take questions on O3B. Effective tax rate going forward is similar to some of the recent guidance we've given, which will be arranged typically in the range of 15% to 20%. One point that is relevant is I dealt with today on the deferred tax liability release linked to the U.S. tax reform. What you should know is that with the pluses and minuses of the U.S. tax reform, this will give us and the longer term, a benefit of about 1% on the effective tax rate. So that's kind of taken into account here, but the range to think of going forward is between 15% to 20%.
Okay.
Yeah, look, I'll try and give you a flavour for O3B and how we're doing. And look, a lot of the customers that I spoke about in the network section, a lot of the growth that you see coming through the network's business is as a result of the fact that we have access to this unique infrastructure, and it really is genuinely unique. We SES made an investment in O3B back in 2009, and as a result, we lead the way in terms of NGSO capability, and that translates directly into a performance on the ground for our customers, which matches terrestrial, and that is really unique. And what we're now able to do as we've sort of matured into SES networks is combine that with the geostationary fleet with the biggest reach and the most capability and configure ground solutions and end-to-end solutions that leverage both, which is why you kind of end up with this sort of mix, if you like, of services that we're delivering to customers that include both our geostationary capability and our MEO fleet, and it translates into resilience and higher performance and software-defined networking and a whole bunch of other capability that we're now able to deliver.
And in terms of, I mean, O3b Empower, I don't think we could have been clearer about it or more definitive about it in terms of the sort of the commitment that we made to that program. A lot of the information that we shared with you guys back in September last year around our ambition for O3b Empower, we couldn't be more persuaded that the medium Earth orbit is the right place to deliver broadband services over satellite. It is the right sort of balance between the amount of capex and investment that you need to deploy to get a constellation up and operational, and the performance that you can deliver. And that's even more the case when you think about it through the lens of having a hybrid fleet and having access to these capabilities. So, absolutely nothing's changed in our commitment to O3b, to MEO, and to the hybrid nature of our business. And I think that the investment that we've made in O3b Empower is a reflection on that. On competition, I guess you're referring there to sort of potential LEO constellations coming along. I remain, and I've been pretty consistent on this, I remain pretty skeptical about the business cases associated with any of those. I still, it's still to be proved whether having hundreds or thousands of satellites is a feature or a bug. I'm fairly clear what I think it is. And again, that's why we've committed ourselves to delivering those same advanced broadband services from medium Earth orbit rather than kind of looking at networks that require sort of hundreds and hundreds of satellites to be launched. So competition's a great thing, innovation's a great thing, but ultimately, the business plans for those networks, I think, still have to be proven.
Okay, just maybe another way to answer the question. Your expansion of your revenues between 2017 and 20, how much of this expansion is supported by the success of O3b in your business plan? Is it a large component?
It's a significant component, but it's not the only thing that we're focused on, right? We've launched a lot of geostationary capacity as well, that's underscoring the expansion of our aeronautical business. So it's a very, very important component. It is one of the most differentiated parts of networks compared to any of the other operators out there. But we're not going to kind of get into the specifics of O3b numbers versus numbers for any one of the individual satellites or other components within our network. We think about our business in terms of the markets that we serve and the verticals that we're in, rather than the specific assets that we have.
Thank you.
We will now take our last question from Alexander Paterk from Societe Generale.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. What I have left with is really maintenance stuff. So first of all, can you help me understand why you took a euro dollar rate at 115 for your guidance? We haven't seen this rate since, I think, July 2017, so I would expect something closer to current rates. And so what would your EBITDA margin guidance in particular look at current rates into 2018, 2020? And then the second one is on IFRS 15. So we have this drag of 15 to 20 million in 2018. Is this a permanent drag going forward? And if, say, HD Plus grows faster than the average video, would that drag increase as well? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Alexander. It's Padraig here. So, so the reason why we've taken the 115 is that the 115 is the FX rate that we've used in our internal business plan, which is very long-term business plan, not just focused on 2018. And we thought that was appropriate to put the guidance at that level. But just to help you, and of course, Jonathan and Richard and the whole. IR team are available to support you in that. But if, for example, the exchange rate were at 120, then the video number, the range for 18 for video would be 1280 to 1300, so 1.28 billion to 1.3 billion. And in 2020, if the rate were 120, the video number would be 1.33, just to give you precision there. And if you want the same numbers on, and again, our IR team can follow up on this, if you want the same numbers with respect to networks, if the rate were at using a rate of 120, the network range would be between 640 to 670. And again, if you were to take the 2020 number for networks, if you were to take 2020 for networks, you'd be at 845. So look, in the end of the day, we report our numbers at constant FX, and we have a very good FX rate in the balance sheet. I've just given you the revenue numbers here, but you have to remember we also have a cost basis. And your question on margin is such that the margin isn't materially impacted because we have a very balanced ratio. And then by the time you come down to the net income, a change of 1 cent in the dollar will impact net income by 1.5 to 2 million euro. And finally, if you want to look at cash flow, as I said earlier, about half of our capex is in dollars. By the time you get the cash flow, it's more or less a wash. So that's on that one. On IFRS 16, the answer is no, it's not an impact into 19 and 20. It's purely an impact between 17 and 18, and it's purely in terms of timing of recognition of revenue. It's mainly an impact between 18 and 19, and it relates to timing of recognition of revenue. So revenue would normally have been recorded in 2018 under the old method will now end up being recorded in 2019 and beyond.
Can I just have a very quick follow-up? If your priority is really to bring the gearing down from 3.3, the ratio there, why would you not choose to go for the lease option for your Empower CapEx? That would make a lot more sense, in my view, if you really want to bring your ratios down. Thank you.
It's an option we have today. Our base case assumption is that we will exercise the procurement option. From a leverage point of view, it's really neutral because whether you exercise the lease or procurement, the entire lease obligation will in any case be treated as debt. But we believe, and that's our target and our objective today, is to exercise the outright procurement option. But again, it's good to have the flexibility.
Thank you.
That concludes today's question and answer session. I'd like to turn the call back to yourselves for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. As the operator said, that concludes today's presentation. Jonathan, myself, and the rest of the IR team are at your disposal for any follow-up questions should you have them. Thank you, and have a good day.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.